Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Purnell and Aki are here. How are you two doing?
Hi.
My
cool, had a cool down day today, so anytime I have one of those is a good time. So,
how did you have a cool down day, like weather-wise or like relaxation-wise?
Oh, weather-wise, it's too damn hot.
God, seriously.
Yeah, the weather fucking sucks. I can't wait for winter.
No, fall. Fall's a thing that exists. Dude, between the two.
Fall doesn't exist anymore. It goes summer to fucking double summer, back to summer, and then winter.
Double summer. Yeah. We do get like a week or so of real fall, and it just goes away fast. But I cherish that week.
It's like that week of spring that we get where you can actually have your windows open.
Yeah. And it sucks that we only get a week now, but I cherish that shit.
You know what I cherish? I cherish when friends reach out to me and they're like, hey, I'm bored. Can I come do your show? I'm like, why? And they're like, I just want to talk video games. I'm like, you're goddamn right you can. What are you doing Tuesday? And with that, Maze Dude's here. Christopher Getman. Maze Dude, how are you doing?
I felt like talking. Doing all right.
Nice. And then I was talking to another friend and mentioned that I was playing Maze Dude's song on the show, and he's like, I love Maze Dude, and I'm like, come talk with us. And Len Stewart's here from Sword Tech Games. Len, how are you?
I'm doing great. It was a great random disturbance from everything else that I'm doing to come here and chat video games with you guys.
Indeed. And with that, let's talk video games. First topic of discussion, what is a video game? Discuss.
What? I was going to say, I appreciate you came with topics of discussion, then you asked that shit. I don't know where to go with it.
Contrary to popular belief, it neither has to be a video or a game, for that matter.
It's an interactive dream
to interpretation. It's much like art.
It's an interactive murder simulator that the Congress people get their panties in a twist about.
Yeah.
I was going to say it's an interactive dream sequence built by people with high active imaginations.
Doesn't even have to be interactive is the crazy part.
Yeah, there's a lot. Lot of non-interactive game, quote unquote, games anymore. But let's start at the true beginning, because you're the one who reached out to me and wanted to do this and just chat video games. Maze Dude, what are you playing these days? What are you enjoying? What games do you want to chat about?
I believe it's called Directive 8020. I just got, and I'm a little disappointed. You know, it's kind of on the whole motif of the whole Until Dawn, where there's a story and there's different, like, you know, treeing decisions and turning points and whatnot. And those can be fun, and I've played a lot of those. This one off the get-go is just off. I don't know. Something about it is kind of like, it's jumping around too much, like right off the get-go. It's like 4 days ahead, 2 days back, 3 days ahead, 4 days back. You're like, dude, just what? And you're jumping characters constantly. So I'm disappointed, unfortunately. So I kind of stopped playing that, and I'm back to playing Resident Evil 4 in PSVR 2, but with all my stuff like amped up, and I'm just having fun shooting people.
Is that the RE4 remake?
Yeah, they did the HD remake for you know, PS4, then PS5 can get it, and then on PS5 you can play with the PSVR 2. So you can get there and play the whole game again in remake in full surround VR, and it's a pretty good port. You can tell it's different from a game that was built for VR. As far as adapted for VR, it's pretty good. And it takes getting used to
movement work and stuff like that. Is it like analog movement that you move slow, or is it like jump movement?
Thankfully, you can make it, you know, smooth but fast. So you can kind of use the stick on one hand to kind of, you know, walk pretty quickly. The hard part is reloading, getting used to just reloading constantly in VR. But once you get a hang of it, it's kind of fun.
How does reloading work in VR?
I mean, you got to like push a button to drop a clip, grab a replacement clip from the pouch on your other hip, jam it into the gun, then cock the gun. Then you can shoot. So instead of just pushing a button to reload, you're doing all those actions while swarms of enemies are trying to get you. So
I got to tell I think I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That ratchets up the tension right there. It's like, I can't just mash a button. I got to do a series of steps.
Yeah. Well, some games, and this threw me off, like you have a grenade. You can't just grab it and throw it. You have to grab it and pull the pin and throw it. I was playing a game and I was like, why are these grenades working? Throwing them, nothing's happening. Awesome. And I realize you have to pull the pin.
Just chucking uncooked grenades.
Yeah, just chucking grenades. Like, they're not doing anything.
You can have this.
Are you at least able to pick up the grenade that you threw but didn't have, that you didn't pop the pin for?
Yeah.
That would be pretty crappy.
Pick it back
grenade
up
sitting
like
on the ground, you can't pick it up.
Let me try.
And then your enemy just picks it up, pulls the pin, and throws it back at you. And you're just like, oh, well, I'm screwed.
Like, I deserve that. I really enjoy playing VR games.
The Metro series, Metro Awakening VR, was made for VR, and they throw a bunch of weird stuff in there where you're like plugging things into walls and like winding things up with a ratchet and like turning on headlamps and
here you go.
Spiders.
Someone who played Metro VR.
Very unlikely. I can't play any VR, sadly.
No, you can ask him about the game. He played it.
Huh. But then, actually, I do want to know the story. What's the story about? I want to know what happens in it, because I can't play it.
Well, basically, you're the guy, and you find out that your wife is there, but she's acting weird, and you're surviving in these subterranean catacombs under, you know, Russia that's been irradiated, and you're trying to figure out what's going on with your wife. Meanwhile,
you're still playing as RTM from the base games, or someone else?
The base games, so I'm not actually sure.
You need to play the base game.
I jumped into the VR one, so I didn't get the backstory. I was just kind of like throwing
it. Old classic Metro is good stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you're trying to find out why your wife is acting weird. There's a backstory that you had a son that died, and then she thinks she's hearing his voices, and then she wanders off. Now in this part of the, you know, destroyed, irradiated, under the, you know, subterranean Russia, you don't want to wander off. There's bad things out there.
No, not really.
Yeah. So you got to find her and bring her back, but you know, you wander into other tribes and gangs and stuff that are out there, and creatures and spiders and lizards and other things that are all irradiated. And I mean, it's a good ride. But
I'm never going to forget any of the times where a spider crawls over your face in the Metro series.
So imagine that in VR, where you actually have it, you have to grab it with your hand, pull it off your face, and then chuck it against the wall.
No.
Like, if you look on YouTube, there are people who claim that their arachnophobia came back from that game.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like the base game when they just walk over it and they never show up. No. Okay.
You have triggered Aki in ways I haven't thought possible.
Spiders. And you have like a lighter that you can light in VR and burn away the spider webs, but you forget that you have the lighter.
Oh, see, you need to play the Metro series. You will not forget you have the lighter, because there are a lot of spider webs, and you will burn them all. Well,
yeah. For the me,
I mean,
like,
you're going to burn them back, all.
Like, I forget controls where it's kind of like, how do you turn your headlamp on? And there's a trick to it. But if you don't, you know, play for a couple weeks and you come back, it's like, okay, well, this doesn't work, so I'll just walk in the dark. It's like, it's weird, some of the rules of VR that are like so nuanced.
One of the things I really like about the concept of VR is weapon positioning. It is so much more interesting, because I watch a lot of videos on like YouTube shorts of people playing VR games. I'm like, man, just being able to lean out and flick a knife at someone's head, that's like, I would love shit like that to be in games that I didn't have to have a screen like a half an inch away from my face. Like, that'd be fantastic. I would love that shit.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat where VR and I can't really get along with each other. But the idea of doing some of the VR stuff makes me want to try someday, if I could figure out a way to, you know, play something with my freaking honker glasses and not get contact lenses to do it.
I've enjoyed my time with VR, but I always found it collecting dust, and we would just get rid of it because it wasn't being used. I think a big problem with the PSVR 2 is that Sony has mostly abandoned it.
Yeah, there's never a lot of games coming out for it ever on anything. Even on Steam, there's not a ton of games that come out for it.
Compared to the first VR, the tech in VR 2 is incredible. It was really smooth, really responsive. It was nice that I didn't need to use 40-year-old PlayStation Move controllers and a 480p camera from the 90s. Be detected.
I'm more interested in the future of tech if we could just get VR down. I don't think VR
is going to be adapted enough.
I don't think it will either, which really sucks.
Either VR or AR would be, either one to me would be valuable, but they need to be able to, you know, monetize the technology enough so the games actually make some money. Even though it seems like they kind of want to go away from that and embrace shitty AI slop shit and make some shit up and fuck us in that way, you know, creatively.
Yeah, I just got alerted to a sale earlier today for my specialty games that I like to review that we can't review right now. And I was looking around in there, and game after game after game was like, oh yeah, we created the visuals using AI. I'm like, bitch, that is literally all a game is its visuals when it's one of these types of games. The fuck are you doing? You're basically doing nothing then. You shouldn't make any money off of this. I'm so fucking tired of seeing motherfuckers with AI. It makes me so fucking mad.
Yeah, me too.
Porn games, the last frontier.
For good reason.
Being invaded by AI slop.
Yeah. It's fucking horrific. So horrific.
They're like going at it and he has like four wangs.
That would be hilarious.
It's like one on the back of his neck for no reason.
Better than being in place of his nose, I guess.
We've all seen the movie Nothing But Trouble, right?
Oh god, yeah. It's a long flashback.
Making everyone feel old right now, aren't I?
Oh man.
Young you Demi would, Moore. But I don't know I if don't I'm old enough because I don't get it. Joe.
I just feel old regularly. I don't need your help to feel old.
That's fair. I mean, we're all getting up there.
So what's Nothing But Trouble?
Really funny movie you should look up. Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd.
Is that the movie where I got that concept from, the dick nose?
Yes.
I was about to say, that's the only thing I remember about that movie is that freaking nose was like, it just came off as disgusting.
Yeah, it was a woman in a veil who had it, right? And you could see partially through the veil. Am I?
Or no, is that a different no. Movie? It was,
it's different. Yeah.
Okay, then I don't know that movie.
Yeah, you need to see this one. You need to.
What's it called again? I'll go look it up.
Nothing But Trouble.
Nothing But Trouble. Right.
Oh, yeah. Just watch. Also watch Moving, because for some reason, that's like one of Mike Wazenchel 80s films from that era.
Nothing But Trouble.
Richard Pryor.
What are some of the other great 80s movies that people need to experience before? Let's try keeping it game related, because I'm going to throw out The Wizard.
I'm about to say there's not very many game related movies from the 80s. Also, I think The Wizard or was 90s. Was that 1990?
80s or 90s. Well, just childhood in general.
I'm going to get panned for these, but I like the Mario movie, the Mario Brothers movie.
So did I.
I was just thinking about that earlier. Yeah. Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, that was a garbage ass movie. It was fantastic.
Yeah. I think there's a panel at MagFest called "That Mario Brothers Movie Is Still Good." Like, there's still, like, there's people who would come to his defense.
Yeah, those real tall, big, buff dudes with itty bitty little heads.
The Goombas. Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I also like the Double Dragon movie that.
I like the Marcus Ospina as a martial artist. That movie, though, I'm mixed about, because some things about it are just awful. The way they did a Bobo was just sad. He couldn't even move. He was too muscular to turn his head.
More like a no-no.
Yeah.
This is from the 2000s, but I Will Live and Die by DOA Dead or Alive. I think that is one of the most entertaining, over-the-top, goofy video game movies out there. And it was
I would have liked
blast.
It more if it had the subtitle Beach Volleyball afterwards, but it wasn't bad.
You're just mad there was no full-on nudity.
Yes, yes, because all the ladies in that were extremely attractive. Yeah, 100%. I'm not going to... You think I'm going to hide behind my perversion? No, my perversion's right out there. My freak flag flies.
Hockey the lesbian, she wants to see boobs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The truth.
So how about boobs with Total Recall? I mean, come on. What are we talking about?
Real. Which Total Recall?
Real or paper mache?
Wait, what do you mean which Total Recall? There's only one, isn't there?
No, they made a remake with Colin Farrell. It was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely
not that one.
Yeah, the original wasn't bad.
You gotta go back to the classic. 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
Yeah, right.
2 weeks? That's a movie? I know $2.
I was Schwarzenegger when he's in that woman's outfit. She's got stuck in a loop saying 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, oh. With the head.
How long are you staying? 2 weeks. Any fruits or vegetables? 2 weeks. And the whole thing melted down.
And exploded. That was awesome.
Yep.
It's supposed to be interesting to remember, too.
And also tied to video games, Knight Rider. Knight Rider, they actually made an SNES or an NES game out of Knight Rider. Yeah. And I loved Knight Rider growing up when I was a little guy.
They have a Knight Rider pinball table in Pinball FX.
Here's an obscure one. Did anyone play Silent Service? Nintendo game.
That name sounds really familiar, but I don't think I played it.
Nintendo game about submarines.
Nope, definitely didn't play it.
Yeah. Oh, submarines are all about like sound you make. They're listening. They have like, you know, all the deep sonar and everything. And
You know what? To that means, they made a Hunt for Red October NES game.
Okay.
Too.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Weirdly, I saw this show on Peacock the other day called The Vigil, and it was all about like submarines, and they're talking about like what they're listening for in the water, and then you also have the new Mission Impossible movie, which is all about submarines, and it got me thinking about like this old Nintendo game that actually did a pretty good job dealing with like the noise in the water around you, where the enemies are, and the sonar and stuff, and I was just kind of like having a flashback to like, dang, you know, that did a decent job.
And then there was Echo the Dolphin.
Echo the Dolphin. So
that has a movie? What?
No, it doesn't have a movie, but it was definitely a game.
Were they making an Echo movie?
That would be fun.
I thought that was an April Fool's thing. I didn't think that was real.
I don't know. Jumping back to the NES topic, here's something for you. What is the worst introduction to gaming you can think of? Because my introduction to the NES was the game Star Voyager. If you were not familiar with Star Voyager... It is a hardcore space sim where you are piloting through space.
I'm having a hard time thinking about what a bad one would be. Like
It was
a bad one would be one where you die so quickly, like Silver Surfer, where you're kind of like, here's Nintendo, and you're like being destroyed immediately. It's like, I can't do anything. This sucks.
As a 4 year old, we had no idea what was happening in Star Voyager. We didn't know what anything did in the game. We were just sitting there and looking at a screen with things flashing and mommy, what do we do? So she traded it with a coworker for pro wrestling.
Mine wrestling. Was the N64 with a Tarzan game that I just did not jive with as a kid.
And it was based off the Disney Tarzan movie?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I felt the same way.
Yeah, all my other introductions to a console were really good. So that was the only one where I was like, I don't really like this. And I liked literally every other game that I had for that console, which, granted, wasn't many. I think I had like maybe 17 total games on the N64, but all the rest of them were fucking awesome.
Yeah, that was all of them. Yeah, I think that was all of them.
Yeah.
Coming into SNES with Star Fox would be challenging, because that was so hexagonal and 3D. It was just... That had a learning curve to it. So,
could you imagine if your very first Super Nintendo game was Stunt Race FX?
I mean, I can still see it being. I mean, if that was your first video game as a whole, I could see that working. Yeah, but if it was the only, if that's your first video game ever, I could totally see that. Because you had nothing to compare to. It's only up from there. And at that point, like, well, video games are a little slow, but it's fun, I guess. And then you end up playing a game that's like, whoa, so that was an anomaly. That was the fluke thing.
Yeah, my first with the SNES was the Super Mario game. So it was great for me.
Here's a question. On any game, did you ever like own a game because you got it as a gift, or you paid money for it because you like saved up your allowance for weeks and weeks and the game sucked, but you still were so dedicated because you spent money on it that you were going to beat that game?
I don't think that ever happened, thankfully. Go ahead. You say?
Adventures of
I was going to say that a family friend bought me a game that I got that exact feeling from. And I kept that game just because it was such a weird ass game. Draken.
Oh,
I don't know.
That is a weird Nintendo, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a Super Nintendo game. And it was like kind of like first person, but like you could actually like extract your party out to like take on battles and figure out like puzzles in certain rooms.
That was an early Nintendo game.
Yeah, I had a weird guy in my family buy that for me, and I was like, yo, this game fucking sucks, but I couldn't help but keep going back to it for some reason, just because it was so weird, like, as a game back then. It was just like, no one else has made this. Like, this is fucking crazy.
Yeah, I've never had anyone buy me a game as a gift that I didn't at least partially like, but I have played plenty of games that I'm like, I fucking hate this, and then completed it any really fucking shitty way.
Yeah.
All right.
For me, it was Deadly Towers.
Those games, so.
On the NES.
Ooh.
Deadly Towers and The Adventures of Bio Billy and the original Nintendo. Horrible games. Yeah. Horrible, but I beat both of them.
Yeah, I've played and beaten the first two Gears games 100%, and then the fourth Gears game 100%. So I've played a bunch of games that I'm like, I fucking do not like this game anymore. And it's always because of all the online. Good
games. Those aren't bad games.
When you're 100%ing it, they're fucking terrible games.
No, that's you're just tired of them. That doesn't make them bad games. That makes you insane.
The multiplayer for those games are abysmal. I do not like it at all. No.
Your decision to be like, I need to get the Seriously achievement.
Yeah.
That's
the whole concept of it was that you finished the whole thing. That was the question.
I mean,
I have buddies who never, ever, ever beat open world games because they get stuck on it, like ever trying to beat every quest. And then they never actually finish the story. It's like they never beat Fallout. They never beat Skyrim because it's like every side quest they must do. And then they get sick of it. Like, well, just take a minute and go back to the main story.
Yeah.
So no, I disagree. Yeah. You don't have to do everything.
Yes, you do. I am very much like your friends. No, you got to do everything else first. The fuck are you talking about? If you can't walk into a boss room and blow your nose in the direction and blow them the smithereens, you haven't fucked around with enough of the side content yet.
I think there's a sweet spot in the middle, you know?
Yeah. We broke Bree of her need to achievement hunt on absolutely everything, so maybe we could get Aki to break soon.
Isn't necessarily achievement hunting. Like, Bree went out and got games to get achievements. I just want to finish all the achievements in the games I do own. I'm not going to go out and buy a game because I'm like, oh, I can get all the achievements in that. I don't think
many of us bought those games. We got those games.
That is fair. Mm-hmm.
Because those promo codes would go out like candy from some of those publishers.
Yeah, but Bree used to buy them before she was the Pepper team.
Yeah.
Which is why she was the last one to review them.
I'm glad we got away from that. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about like the easy completion games where you could like pay $5 for a game and get all of the achievements in like 20 minutes.
Oh,
or get a platinum trophy in like 20 minutes, something like that.
And then typically they were also triple stacked, so you could do it three different fucking times on Xbox.
Len keeps disappearing.
Yeah. Pretty sure Lynn already came back, though.
Yeah, I brought him
didn't
in.
They? Okay.
Yeah, I had to switch devices. That's why I kind of blinked right there. Yeah.
Anytime I see you go away, I'll pull you right back in. I'm keeping my eye on things.
I feel like I was hearing that about. I think learning that from you is largely what that and the console changes is largely why I stopped caring about achievements in the first place, aside from individual games themselves and like what I did in them. It's like, okay, yeah. I have a score that is like, I haven't making up this number because you're way beyond that now. Like, oh, I have a score that's 80,000. I did a great job. And I learned somebody else has 100,000 because they bought a bunch of games where you can get 1,000 in 5 minutes. Like, yeah. That kind of cheapens the entirety of the number. Like, it serves no purpose.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, then, so that's, of course, that's why that stuff doesn't matter to me. For me, it's just, if I have this and I've started it, I want to do everything in it and be done with it. That's what it is for me.
I don't want to do everything in a game. I want to do everything that I want to do in a game. Like in Forza Horizon 6 right now, there's an achievement to get all of the PR stunt stars in one specific area. I have all but one star, and it's because of a shitty drift zone where you have to drift around corners to earn enough points to get 3 stars. I got 2. And I just can't fucking deal with it, so I'm not going to bother with that achievement.
Fair.
I got like 880 in that game. I'm happy with that. I don't need 1,000. I got 880. I got like 850 in MLB The Show. I'm good with that. I feel accomplished when I have a high number like that.
Joe's got a life to lead. He's got to move on, man. He's just got to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have that mentality. If I just see it's not finished, it just bothers me until I finish it. It's like a brain on that topic, I have to.
Playing a Star Ocean game and trying to get a perfect score on that, you'll lose your goddamn mind.
Oh, I have.
Well, here's a pivot, though. Who, because I'm on this list, did you have a game for like, you know, NES or SNES, and you never beat it? You liked it, but you just kept dying at like level 3 or whatever. And then later they come out with ROMs and you have save states. And you're like, finally, decades later, I'm going to get farther in this game because you can actually play and die and just undo, you know, and keep going forward. Like, I had a list of Nintendo games that I was like, finally, I can get farther. And it was actually a lot of fun to kind of like finally beat the game that I couldn't beat when I was a kid.
The funny part of it, the part of it for me, the annoying part is that I want to be able to answer that question. But the thing is, like, it might be a game I'm not remembering, but for the most part, I was able to beat every game back then. The problem is I wouldn't have the time to dedicate the amount of effort to learn and fail to do it as an adult. So having the ROM is what allows me to do it in my modern day because I don't have the childhood time to do it.
Yes, Pernell.
Like, for example, absolutely. Blaster Master, Ninja Gaiden 1. Like, I beat those as a kid.
Blaster Master, Ninja Gaiden 1, Battletoads. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I can't say Battletoads because I avoided that game until I was like 32, and then I probably regretted it when I finally played it.
Rare Replay has rewinds and save states and everything else in Battletoads, and I still can't beat the fucking marble rolling level near the end where you have to escape the ball rolling at you. I can't beat that one.
You've gotten further like in that than I ever have.
I think my takeaway from that when I finally played was I think I'd appreciate Battletoads more if it got a remake where they actually did a better job of like getting the controls right and everything.
Yeah.
Fine tuning it all. Because
I really like the new one that Diwala made. I thought that was a really solid entry.
What was that?
The new Battletoads that Diwala Studios made.
Ah.
I'm unfamiliar.
I thought that one was pretty solid. It's on Xbox.
I'm familiar. I just never ended up playing because that was also back before I played the other Battletoads. So I was like, I don't have an affinity for it. So I'm not jumping for the new one.
Same thing.
Battletoads and Megalomaniacs on SNES. I beat that several times, but you have to memorize the levels. Otherwise, you're screwed. You know, it's like you have to jump here and then wait 2 seconds, jump here. And, you know,
the
original on NES, forget it. But you said Blaster Master. That's another example where it's kind of like, dude, it's like you save forever to build up your weapon where you can finally have these awesome guns. You hit once, you lose all of it. You're like, crap! Yeah. The save states.
Master was a brutal game.
Yeah, it was.
You go from stages one through four, cakewalk. Stage 5, cakewalk. Stage 5 boss is where the beginning of the bullshit kicks in. Yeah. Then you get to the ice stage and you want to just throw your controller. Yeah. Area 7 is a maze. It's not so bad. It's just you get lost there. And then Area 8, you just hate yourself.
Yeah.
Spikes. Oh, yeah.
Boss, if you don't stumble into the cheese way to beat the boss, he is a jackass, too. And when I beat him,
you pause at the right time. And yeah.
No. The final boss, his thing is he can get stuck in a pattern where he'll push up against the wall and he'll swing his whip. But he'll swing it to the side of you. He'll never connect. So if you stay there, just shoot him until he does. But you have to kind of luck out.
I whip my hand back and forth.
Oh, God.
If you don't pull it off, he's just a dick.
I whip my whip back and forth.
See, I don't have any games that I couldn't beat when I was a kid that I can beat now. Because if I couldn't beat it then, I realistically still can't beat it now. But there are games I've gotten a lot further in and probably realistically could beat if I had the time to actually play them. Like Soul Reaver 2, I've gotten a lot further in that than I did when I had it back in the PS1.
To be fair, though, I would say this ties into the whole, you're like, I'm younger than you guys, but because you were coming up when save files and all were a thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like a large part of why a lot of NES games were what they were and their bullshittery was like they had that whole element where they were trying to like prolong the value of a game by just intentionally making them more difficult with like restart paces where you have to go all the way back to the beginning of like four levels to get something, another try at something. So with PlayStation and whatnot, it became a lot easier to beat games. They'd still be difficult, but you could retry a game or a difficult spot almost immediately. So you can just put it forth until you get it right.
Shit, I didn't have save states until I was like 15.
Yeah,
it's like not my fault you're all ancient.
Nonetheless, it's still, for the sake of the conversation, it does indicate that you're like, well, I beat everything. I'm like, I don't know. I can't imagine you playing.
Oh, no, there's lots of stuff I didn't beat, but there's nothing that I couldn't beat then that I'd probably be able to beat now. I still probably couldn't beat any of them that I couldn't.
One of the earliest games.
I still miss the games that I beat as a kid that I would not want to try to beat now. Weirdly, this past October, I went to Retro Game Con in Syracuse, and they had an old console set up with Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a go. I remembered the code to get to Mike Tyson. I still remember it. 007-373-5963. I don't know why I remember that. But that gets into Mike Tyson. I got to the third round. While people around me were like watching me play this, I was like, oh my God, I'm actually playing Mike Tyson. I got this far. And then I lost.
No.
But
the funny thing about that is you eventually, as an adult, you lose all pattern recognition. You can remember a pattern, you can do the thing. Like, Mike Tyson is bullshit and a half. But if you master that pattern, you can make him look like a joke. And everybody's watching you play it.
But it's also really easy to lose. Like, you mess up a couple times, like, crap, you know. But I remember beating the game when I was a kid. When I was playing him, I got really far. My mom showed up home with Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I made everyone wait for me to finish the game before we could eat. I was like, just wait. And I beat Mike Tyson while my family watched. And it was like an epic childhood moment of like, I did it with an audience. This ultimate hard guy, but it's like, do I want to go back and do that again now? It's like, I almost did in October, but mostly no.
I had a similar moment as a kid. Me, my brother, and my mom were playing Wizards and Warriors, the original one.
God, yep.
Oh, man.
Love that game. We were getting pretty far through it. And Len, are you working on construction over there?
I'm just walking through my house, that's all.
Oh.
Are you building it? No, I'm so kidding.
Loud floor.
Just walking through my house, getting a bottle of water. That's all. That's all.
But we got to the second forest area, and it was like 9 o'clock at night, and we like it was bedtime, and we had to go to bed, and we're begging my mom if we could stay up to see how far we can get. I think it was. Because after the wooded area is where you have to try climbing the fucking tower wall with all the blocks that go in and out. So that was a nightmare and a half. But I want to say around 11:30 that night, we defeated the final boss.
Nice.
And as a family, and we celebrated because that was one of the first games that we beat together. Nice. We also beat Mario 2 together, and my mom used to whip the shit out of Contra. My mom beat Contra on 3 lives.
Man, I envy families that can make have stories like that where their folks actually play games with them.
My, that would be cool.
So get this. My dad found out about the first Final Fantasy on NPR. Huh. And he bought the game and we played it. And I was like, I think I was like 6, 7, or 8 years old. And he brought it home and he played it. I didn't play it with him. I just was like watching him play it. And then I felt like I beat it with him once he like finished. He actually sat there and completed it like a little bit by little bit every night. And nice. I watched him play it. And it was like, whoa, you know, and I think that's what turned me into an RPG head.
I envy that too. That sounds like an awesome way to get into those things.
Yeah, right? I mean, I couldn't even believe it. I was like, wow, he found out about this from NPR. Like, years later, I knew what NPR was. You know, I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, you know, he really found out about it on that? That's crazy, you know?
My love for RPGs spawned with Final Fantasy II on the Super Nintendo. My buddy Jeremy owned it. And we would have a sleepover party at my friend Larry's house. And it'd be like me, Larry, Pat, Aaron, just a bunch of people hanging out, and we would play through the whole game every weekend. We would get together further and further and further through, and we beat the game together. And then we did it again with Final Fantasy III. Then we did it again with Chrono Trigger, and that spawned my love for RPGs.
I feel like my story is like the weirdest one there, because like I remember renting Dragon Warrior 1 and 2, and though I played them, I didn't really understand them nor click with them. But what got me to actually like them was the fact that my dad got me the wrong game for Christmas. So I wanted Final Fantasy Adventure because, you know, it was like a Zelda game. At least that's how it looked. And he got me Final Fantasy for the NES instead. I was like, what is this?
Mine was luck. I went to Sam's Club back when they used to sell cheap ass games, and I found Legend of Dragoon there, and that's probably the game that actually made me start liking, like seriously liking games in the first place. Got that for like $5 or something like that for my PS2, even though it's, 'cause they had all the cheap-ass PS1 games that you could buy, and you could play them on your PS2. So I bought a whole bunch of random-ass little games like that over the years, and it's probably one of my most favorite games even now. So
when I was in my mid-teenage years, I would always like go to stores and pick up like random PS1 RPGs. And I like started a huge collection of them. So like by the time I was like 19, 20 years old, I had like every RPG known to man on PS1. Like I even had like the original Suikoden 2 and like, like I had shit. I had the Valkyrie Profile, which is like goes for like a lot of money on odd sites. And, you know, I what else did I have? I had, Shit. I had the original A Legend of Dragoon 2, but I also had Lunar 1 and 2. It was all of those games, you know. It was crazy. It was crazy times.
Where you just pick it up as working designs.
Yeah.
Huh?
I miss working designs.
You know what was cool about the first Lunar was that at the end of the game, when you beat the game, they did all the voiceover outtakes, and it was the craziest experience. Like me at like 15 years old, being like, "What the fuck am I listening to?" Like, and plus they curse and they're like, "Oh fuck, I fucked that up," and you know, it's very like a very human moment. Like, and you're just listening to this after this fantasy RPG that you just beat, and it was like such a surreal experience. It was like, wow, what am I listening to? It's basically like listening to us like talk about this shit. You know, it's like, oh well, I fucked that up, but when I spoke in this way, man, I felt like I was feeling it. And it was just like this whole like big back and forth, and it did like a lot. It was like 2 hours of this like hidden content.
I don't even remember that. Was this Silver Star Complete or was it Sega CD?
It was Silver Star Complete.
Oh, okay.
For PS1.
They added a lot for that.
They did, yeah.
That's why I miss working designs with the bonus discs and the maps and the collector booklets and pendants even and weird shit.
Yeah, they had the pendant for Lunar for Lunar 2 package, the collector's and the edition.
Card,
like, yeah.
Bromide trading cards, all kinds of stuff.
What is this thing y'all are talking about?
Working Designs is a publisher that put out RPGs with really extravagant packaging. Look up
Before Lunar, they were popular. This Lunar, was before Lunar they were 2 popular.
And Ark the Lad on PlayStation 1.
Oh, Ark the Lad. Don't get me started, man. I played all three of them. And you know what's cool is that the save actually carries over from the first to the second to the third if you get like the whole completed package. Nice. Which I got out of a bargain bin for like $50, I think, because it was all three games all in one like gigantic package, and it was like, oh wow, what is this? You know, I didn't even know what it was. I picked it up. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna check this shit out, you know. And it was like it was out of this world. It was just crazy to me that I actually got this thing, and then I sold all these games, by the way, guys. Like, I don't even have them anymore. I needed money in my late 30s or early 30s. You know what I'm saying?
With how much you had to think on what you had, I kind of already figured that much. Or I was like, I don't have to think. I can just walk back because I still have every game from the PS2 forward that I ever owned.
That's me also. I'm a pack rat.
I have certain ones that I've held on to, but like, a lot of them I had to jettison.
Like, I'm still like, my dad actually just recently got on my case. Like, why didn't you sell that Magic Knight Rare of the game? You don't need that anymore. And I was like, it's a principal thing, Dad. I wanted $1,000. The guy wanted to give me $950. I said, no.
Speaking of things that should have been in the bargain basement, I want to jump back to a topic.
Magic Knight Rare was a good game, or at least a fun game. Bargain bin,
I'm not saying that should have been in the bargain bin. I'm trying to jump back to a previous topic of games that we regret buying. And this is something I wish was in the bargain bin, but I bought it at launch because I'm a dumb asshole, and I forced myself to pretty much play through the whole thing and play the online component a whole bunch, and that is Guitar Hero Live. The newest one with Guitar Hero 3x2 button layout.
But you were obsessed with Guitar Hero back then, so I can totally see you buying like everything with his name on. I feel like I remember you being into Guitar Hero too before Rock Band.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Because Guitar Hero existed before Rock Band.
Yeah.
The people who made Guitar Hero made Rock Band, while the people who made Tony Hawk games made Guitar Hero from 3 on.
Yeah, I remember that, because that was when they had both games had some of the same songs, so people were like, who did the chart better?
Yeah.
And of course it was Rock Band.
But Guitar Hero Live was their Xbox One PS4 era game that they used like live crowds, and there were, I think, 35 songs on the on-disc set list, and that's it. Everything else was an online service that is now shut down and gone.
Ew. Gross.
Yeah, so you can't even play the majority of that game anymore.
Ooh. Trash.
Yeah. That's what I forced myself to play.
I have a recent one for you. Warhammer 40K, Rogue Trader. I feel traitorous by spending my money on that game because, oh my God, it spins my head. It, you know what? I really like the games that are like that, but man, this one was just so hard to follow and so hard to kind of like get into the groove of, and I fell off of it completely.
That's probably because that game kind of spits in the face of most gamers, because in most gamers often tend to choose the how can I be a paragon, because it just feels right for most people. In Rogue Trader, you're supposed to be the biggest sack of dicks on the planet, and if you're not doing that, the game punishes you.
Well, no, it's not that I really wanted to do good. It's more like, you know, there was just so much lore to it that I felt like overwhelmed by that. But you know what I mean? Like, because I'm not really a Warhammer 40K guy, but I guess if you are one of those people who really follows that stuff, that might be like appealing to you, and maybe therefore like the rest of the game comes naturally to you. But it was more like the game mechanics were natural to me, but the lore was like, oh my god, kill me with this shit, you know?
Yeah, that makes no fucking sense. Fair.
Yeah.
Retired USAF in chat saying, I bought Lawbreakers from Limited Run Games pre-order. Do I win?
I mean,
that's a rough... Did you get your money back, at least? I would hope you get your money back if, you know, the game ceases to exist.
I mean, I think only one person at this point could top that one, and it's that game that existed for like 4 days and then left, that came out on Steam not too long ago. Shit, what was its name? Oh, no.
Nope, got a sealed game because they shipped out codes. Ah!
Oh, no.
That'll be a talking piece for the future.
Painful.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you one thing that I really like, guys, is the new Fallout 4 remake thing for Switch. I'm enjoying that game. I've never played Fallout before, any Fallout, and I really like the Fallout 4 for Switch.
On the PS4 and 5, it's excellent.
It's awesome. So fucking good. I can't believe how much I like it, because I'm not really like an action-y guy, like, for sense, but, you know what, I like wielding melee weapons in those kind of games. Like, I really like doing that in Cyberpunk, you know, and Skyrim and stuff like that, but doing it in this game feels really good. Feels a little bit more better, I don't know, better to me.
More better.
I don't know. More better, yeah.
You didn't like the lore of Warhammer Rogue Trader. Would maybe a change in gameplay be more up your alley? Because if you like melee and smashing things, Warhammer 40K Space Marine is a great stress reliever of a monster murder simulator.
But does it have that
shoot and smash?
Does it have all that like lore that I have to like fucking think about and be involved?
Not really. You're put in a place and you're told just, kill.
Yeah. Those are straight up action games.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, they have Space Marine was originally on 360, PS3, PC. Space Marine 2 came out on Series and PS5. And then Space Marine remastered came out.
Here's a good action game that I really liked. I really liked Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Yes. It's a good one.
Yeah, I love that game. That gave me all kinds of good feels, because I could just run up all a whole camp and just slit everybody's necks. And then like go and then like, you know, take on gods and crazy shit. That made me feel powerful in ways that I was like, all right, maybe I do like action games. All right.
Cassandra was
let's cool. go.
And you got yeah, to a dick.
Assassin's Creed's half action, half stealth. So it's like you can choose how you play, you know? It's like
right.
You can, you know, but you can also be
really sick. Depends on the Assassin's Creed game at it this does, point. Because Odyssey is not 50-50.
True.
No, it isn't. You can do whatever you want in that game. It's very much like Skyrim, but like you could just be like, hey, you know, I'm just gonna, you know, fuck this girl over here, and then like, you know,
which split everybody's foot.
Yes, it is. It is the correct answer every time. And they just pan off and then they fade back.
And then once you can, you get Cassandra her oily costume, and she's just in like a bikini, basically all oiled up. And then you just leave it on that costume for the rest of the game, because there's absolutely no need for a different costume.
Absolutely.
You can't win a fight when you're not wearing armor, then you don't deserve to win a fight.
Yep.
So on that topic, how do you feel about the game Stellar Blade?
Bullshit for my taste. But otherwise,
a lot of costumes.
Yeah, I was about to say, but otherwise, she's really hot.
Hockey she said it's not on Xbox yet.
Yeah, it'll never be on Xbox, but it is on Steam, and one day I might own it on Steam. I'm just still bothered by how much AI implementation is in that game.
Hey, it's coming to Switch too, as well, so maybe it'll come to Xbox. Never know.
I was just amused by that one because it's like, hey, this is a game where you're fighting a whole bunch of monsters with these intricate combos, battle weapons, and the girl's hot, and there's all sorts of skimpy costumes you can put her in. It's like, both?
Yep, and no matter
the
what.
Same the game?
And no matter what the combo is that you're using on an enemy, her ass is always on full display for you.
Which was amusing, but honestly, that's game, and I hate to admit it, I got really, really, really far and then didn't beat it because I got stuck on a boss, and I got stuck on a boss where I like didn't have any ammo or anything like going into it, and then I just got pissed off because I kept dying over and over, and I couldn't like rewind to a previous level to get ammo. It was just like, just start again at the boss. I'm like, I can't. It's like you play the boss for like 20 minutes, you're blocking constantly, doing every deflection you can, attack when you can, get really far, die, and then it's like lost half an hour of your life. Want to rewind, do it all over again? It's like I get frustrated with games like that.
I both love and hate Souls-like for that exact reason. I do not feel the accomplishment that lots of Souls fans are like, oh, it's so hard, but once you beat it, it feels good. I'm like, no.
No.
I don't feel good about it. I'm glad it's over, but I don't feel particularly happy that I spent, 5 days working on this one piece of shit boss. That just
makes the idea of going back and playing the new game plus and having all those fun things and then going through and destroying it. But hours beating one boss for that, it's like, there's a point where you stop caring.
Well, you know, how about Elden Ring? I mean, what's your thoughts on that? Because I actually got a cheat. I got a cheat for that allowed me to just not lose HP ever. So, and then I just played through that whole game, and it felt really good when I got to the end of it because I didn't have to deal with, I worked so hard and worked up my anxiety to a level unsustainable to actually just beat the first boss. So fuck that. I'm just going to just go through everything in this game and feel really good because I played through a kind of decent game and I didn't have to, no mental logistics to get there.
I like games that have accessibility options like that, that allow you to turn on infinite health and stuff like that.
Me too, John.
I'm having to like force a cheat into the game, I can't take pride in that. But if it's something the game allows me to do, otherwise I'll just skip the game. I know Souls likes aren't for me, so I don't get into them.
Yep.
I love Souls like and they piss me off so much, and I have no pride. I don't give a shit.
Same,
if I can find a way to cheat the system, then it's just evening the playing fields because them asshole bosses are cheating.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. I mean, I'll cheat to get there. I don't give a shit. Especially if it's a game like the fucking Soulsborne games. I mean, fuck that. I'd rather not be stressed out and play a game to feel what it is to get to the end and through my own experience, like Joe was talking about, rather than being like, oh yeah, I'm a purist. I'm going to get to the end and, then I can tell my friends and they won't laugh at me. Yeah, that'll be great. No, fuck that, man. I mean, this is my own experience, right?
Your friends will always laugh at you. Don't worry.
Yeah. No matter what you do, because we're all morons in our own way. Yeah. We're good.
So I know we've been chatting for a while. Before we wrap this up, since Aki, Purnell, and I have some reviews we're going to have to tackle in a little bit, let's talk about what's coming out. There is a huge lineup of games coming through the end of the year. What do you have your eyes on? What is in your wish list for the rest of this year?
Don't all chat at once.
At once. Start
this
off.
Is for you too.
Len, what are you looking forward to through the rest of the year?
Oh, you started with me. Damn it. Go to somebody else. Come on.
I can rattle off a ton because like I usually keep a list of games that I'm interested in that are coming out that, hey, if we could afford them, cool. If not, oh well. But let's see. I have Sword Art Online in July, Halo Campaign Evolved, Beast of Reincarnation, Metal Gear Solid, Resonance of Plague Tale, Blood of the Dawnwalker, Hot Wheels Infinite Rush, Wolverine's coming out, Gothic 2 Classic, Minecraft Dungeons 2, Gears of War E-Day's coming, Castlevania Belmont's Curse, Tales of Eternia Deluxe, Final Fantasy Resonance.
There's half just the games he's so listed.
Much shit coming.
The Elliot game that's coming out for Switch, the Square Enix action 2D HD action game that's coming out.
2 days, I got my pre-order ready to go.
Yeah, Tales of Elliot.
That one. Adventures of Elliot.
Adventures of Elliot. Yeah.
Did you play the demo for it?
I did, but I played it a while ago, so I'm kind of like I'm knees deep into Fallout 4, like I was talking about. But
demo progress carries over.
Yeah, me too.
When does For Loop come out? Isn't that coming out like soon?
For Loop. Oh man, I know Lloyd was talking about that one. For Loop. They did a
bad robot
test for it recently.
Yeah, there's like a closed beta, and then like. It's like I don't know. It sounded interesting. I'm blanking on like the reasons why, but it looked like unique, and it was like Bad Robots company. You know, it's like Tom Cruise's company, the Mission Impossible movies. So it's like they made a game. It's like, well, that's kind of cool. You know,
tactical 4-player co-op shooter crafted for endless replayability and infinite ways to build the ultimate team.
We're gonna build that team, man.
Yeah, that one is slated for Steam and PS5 right now.
Well, I'm a PS5 guy. I know you're not, Joe, but that caught my eye.
Hey, I have one, so I'm looking forward to Wolverine.
Yeah. 007 First Light. Anyone play that one yet? Or is that still coming out soon? You played it?
Yeah, it's a great game. Good. I love that game.
In fact, I was in 007 Quantum of Solace, the PS2 game. So I worked on that one. Yeah. 20 years ago. I know it's kind of like, ooh, 007 game. Like, that's kind of cool. But I think this is a standalone story. It's not mimicking a movie. It's just kind of like in that world. So it's good. Okay, good to know.
Yeah, it's great. Do you like the Hitman games?
Somewhat, yeah.
It's a more action-y version of that. Like, you still have, you know how you have the different ways you can complete each level in Hitman, and there's a giant checklist, and you can start just doing them as you see fit, and replay the level and just keep doing it? Yeah, it has all of that in this, but it's so much more action-y and stealthy, realistically, both ironically at the same time.
Okay.
It is great. I am a hoe for that kind of stuff. Like, I'll play through a level, and then I'm like, okay, time to replay it and mark off another couple of these check boxes. And nope, time to do it again to get the last of them. And that's how I've been playing through the game. Don't have to, but oh, it's so fun. You get some extra stuff if you do, and it's great.
Speaking of that thing, what's the blank on the name? It's a new game that came out. It was really a lot of like gun kata type stuff, but sci-fi. But you're supposed to die. When you come back, you get to like choose like upgrades, like you're supposed to die over and over. Anyone know what I'm talking about?
No.
I'm looking for the darn title of this thing. It's like Pragmata. It's not Pragmata, it's something similar. It was like one of those weird sci-fi games.
Soros,
yes. Anyone play that one yet?
No. I have not played that one, no.
No, I have not.
Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Come back stronger.
I'm pretty sure that's a PlayStation game, isn't it?
It is.
You come back stronger after each death as you delve deeper into this hostile world. That's how they put it.
The Returnal devs. Housemark.
Yeah, that's not on Xbox, so I don't got it.
Yeah, but that's on my radar. So you're asking, like, ask what he said about this coming out. It's more about what came out recently that I haven't played yet that I'm excited about trying. The other one on that list is Resident Evil Requiem. Has anyone here played that?
I wanted to. We did not get that one, sadly.
Not yet.
I played it, and I got like halfway and then I couldn't get anywhere. And then I just watched a playthrough on YouTube and it was satisfying enough. It was a really good game, actually, story-wise and gameplay-wise. It's a very good game. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I've played a lot of games, just not that one yet.
What else is on everyone's radar through the rest of the years? And anything else on, what about this fall? Anything coming? I'm pretty excited about Gears E-Day. I want to see how that turns out. They have a really nice looking collector's edition statue for that. I've kind of been limiting myself to maybe one a year if I do a collector's edition, and I think this is the one I want this year.
Speak to that. Speaking of later in the year, is anyone here going to the Lake George Video Games Expo? Because that's a fairly new one in New York. It's like their second or third year, and I'm doing a panel at it.
Oh, what are you doing a panel on?
Making game music. I'm going to showcase tracking and live in person, do some music, and showcase how to make cool music with extreme limitations.
You know what? You know what convention you should do, Maze Dude? You should do Too Many Games.
That's
Is
that the one?
Me and Joe are going to it.
When does that happen?
It happens the 26th to the 28th. It's a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in about 2 weeks from now.
Oh, shoot. So this month.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
That's going to be a bit tough. I got plans, but...
Well, if you're interested, I have a room. I am going. You can carpool with me and Ian. We will be leaving Friday whenever Ashley gets home from work. So
since this is a gig for, I'll be actually showcasing Pixel Noir for the last time.
I was curious how that was going.
Yeah, this is the last time that we'll be showcasing it. I had an opportunity to showcase it in for MAGFest next year. But my guys were just like, well, then it's going to be like 3 years out. So instead of kicking a dead horse, we're just going to lay this horse to rest. And, you know, we'll do, you know, Too Many Games for the last time. And that'll be it. That'll be it for Pixel Noir showcasing. I'm kind of sad about it because we've been doing it for probably the last decade. Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be that. And I have Joe and company to help me at my booth. And I got somebody to take me there because, of course, I don't know if you all know this, but I don't drive. So I will be driven there, and I will, like, get around by myself when I'm over there. And usually I have my guys there with me, but they can't go because one doesn't have a job, and the other is not making enough money to... split the cost.
Damn.
So that's where we are. But I really want Pixel Noir to kind of like live on. I think my like thing for Pixel Noir is it was just to like really get it on Nintendo consoles and any other consoles, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? Like my childhood dream was to just have my own game that I've created on a Nintendo console and then just call it a day. You know what I mean? Yep. That may or may not still happen, but I know for conventions, like, it just the cost doesn't meet, you know, the flash doesn't meet the smash, as they say. Yeah. You know, so that's kind of where we're at. I gave you
some emails. Hopefully they'll get you somewhere. I really want to see Pixel Noir hit all platforms. I would love to see it get picked up by some kind of boutique publisher. I could get emails for sure.
And you know what too, Joe, at this point, like 2.5 years in, I kind of want it to just like, I don't even care if I have to do like a 60-40 deal where they get the 60 and I get the 40. Just get the shit out on the fucking consoles and just like immortalize this fucking thing already, because I've spent like literally 1/4 of my life on doing this game. So it's kind of like, get the shit out there. Please.
Oh man. All right. Chris, where can people keep up to date with you and what you were doing?
I gotta be better about my newsletter and all that stuff, but you know, anything social / Maze Dude. So Facebook, X, whatever, MazeDude.com. Sign up for my newsletter. I got new stuff coming out, but not till later in the year.
Well, I know we will have you back on again whenever you are ready to talk about that. You are always welcome on the show, as evidenced by the fact that we did a show with you for literally no reason but to talk about video games.
Happy to talk.
Yep. Love having you on, Chris. Len, where can people keep up to date with you and what you are doing?
I guess Len's282 on Twitch and LinkedIn. I'm also on Discord. You can reach out to me at Len Stewart on Facebook. And I think that's pretty much it. If you want to go to my, if you want to check out Pixel Noir, you can just go to SWDTECHGAMES.com and go to our Steam page from there to check out Pixel Noir. That's it.
Very good. Len, Chris, love you both. Glad to have both of you on. Come back anytime you want, but we are going to move on to review, so we will let you two get going and enjoy your night.
All right.
Have fun. Right on.
Any love final you words?
Bye-bye. Oh, final words?
Final words.
Well, if you're giving us some final words, eat well, sleep well, and don't work yourself to death. All right. That's all I got off the top of my head.
I'll just say, keep making stuff.
Right on.
All right. Bye-bye.
Rock on.
See you guys.
Laters.
Have a good night.
Oh, that was fun. I love episodes where we could just bullshit and do nothing.
Fair. I mean, it makes it a hell of a lot easier just to hang out.
Yeah.
To
don't have to do research on a project. Don't have to play a game in preparation. You just say, hey, let's talk.
Yeah, let's fuck about. It's great.
Yeah.
Do like.
Speaking of talking, we got more talking we got to take care of, because we got reviews and preview palooza, I'm going to call it. We got a bunch of previews. Do y'all want to do the previews first or the reviews first?
It's entirely up to you. Either way.
What, Pernell? Which ones?
I like the idea of doing the preview or the reviews first, but give me like a minute to go refill my drink.
Oh man, you're first. All right, go get your drink. Aki and I hold down the fort.
I'm a thirsty man.
Thirsty man, get your drink. What do you think we should do for a giveaway tonight? I'm thinking Blueberry. Hidden Trap was nice enough to hook us up with some extra copies of the game Blueberry. I believe that will be the game we do a giveaway for tonight.
That works.
So I will get that set up momentarily. What else is going on? Thursday's going to be a shit show of a news episode.
Yeah.
This week is
just going to be shit.
Ugly. This week has been so ugly and so, like, oh man, how much of the Xbox presentation we saw last week was real?
I'm worried very little of it at this point, and that just terrifies me.
How much is real? How much is canceled? How much is getting shelved? How much is reversing course? Oh,
enough,
that's crazy.
Most all. I worry. I very worry. And I just made tweets about how great everything seemed to be going and how excited I was for everything.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. There's rumors of layoffs hitting Sony as well. So who knows? Could be an industry-wide thing. I'm hearing BioWare might be in trouble.
I think literally everybody's in trouble at this point. But don't worry, all the IPs are going to be kept by the select few who will then do nothing with them.
We don't know if that'll be the case. The last time the Xbox let companies spin off, like Twisted Pixel, who are the ones who did Max and the Curse of the Brotherhood? There were a couple of them that they let spin off back to independent. They let them keep their IPs.
Huh.
Yeah, well, like you nice saw Max and Curse of the Brotherhood release on Switch and PlayStation. It's, you know, it obviously depends on what the games are, I guess, and good. If they feel like the IP's worth keeping, but we'll see. But review time, should we get into this?
Yeah.
All right, first game tonight, Beholgar 2, developed by Serkan Bakar, published by Dolores Entertainment, released June 12th, Xbox Play Anywhere, Switch, PS5, $17.99. The ancient evil is awakened, and the fate of the world hangs by a thread. Even Beholgar, the legendary warrior, knows that the enemy cannot be defeated by ordinary steel. There is only one weapon capable of slaying the darkness, but the blacksmith who forged it died centuries ago. Cornell, what is going on in Beholgar 2?
Beholgar 2 is a 2D platformer action game where you are traversing a multitude of levels that have each with their own bit of a theme, such as like a desert palace or a hellscape, with the ultimate goal being to reforge the Sword of Destruction and then taking it to destroy the Lord of All Evil who exists in the land of Kerr. The game itself is, if you were to think about what kind of game would it play like, think like we were kind of talking about Wizard and Warriors earlier. I guess that could be a funny example, only with better controls.
You have low health, better get some health. It's not going to stop. You need health.
I don't know how to tell you this. I don't know if the Beholder devs will be like, you know, I really love that Wizards and Warriors interlude. Play over like 3 minutes of him discussing our game. Or maybe they will. Maybe they're fans of Wizards and Warriors too. Hey, it's a great
if
game.
If you're not a fan of Wizards and Warriors, that's on you.
If not Wizards and Warriors, then to a lighter extent, just think like a 2D plot, just like a typical 2D platformer with like hack and slash elements to it. At the base form, Beholgar starts the game with like a typical sword that can kind of do like a 3-swing combo. And that is his primary attack. And he can also jump, and as he defeats certain enemies, they will drop sub-weapons, a la Castlevania, which you can use to attack enemies from a distance in various ways, just like a Molotov, which will kind of go out an arch and then land and leave a bit of fire, or a flaming arrow, etc., etc., different types. You start out with only being able to carry 5, but as you progress through the game, you'll eventually discover hidden items that will allow you to increase your inventory capacity for carrying more sub-weapons. You'll also eventually come across a couple other different weapons in the game, of which point you'll then be able to use those free will, like by switching through them. You have a total of 5 different weapons. You'll be able to switch between them at will to just kind of use the ones that best suit you. You'll be able to acquire resources by discovering and breaking objects that will give you upgrade materials that can advance these weapons up through 3 stages of development. Every weapon, with the exception of 1, uses steel, with the last one using moonstone. Upgrade it, and obviously moonstone is a far rarer resource because it upgrades the best weapon in the game, so good luck getting all of the moonstone to upgrade it to its max level. The actual effect of these weapons doesn't change so much as just their power becomes stronger, so they hit harder. As you're playing through each level, you'll come across, like I said earlier, various hidden rooms with like items that can let you advance your character, increase your health. Sometimes you'll come across NPCs which will allow you to either complete a quest for either reward or a sense of progression to continue the quest, or you might get access to other things, such as, for example, early on you'll help a blacksmith, and by helping him out, you'll begin obtain the ability to upgrade your weapons to get a sort of super move. Super move being an attack that occurs when you deal enough damage to enemies and maximize a power bar. It generally can be used in a way where you can kind of spam them if you're really good. Like you can beat up a boss, hit him multiple times and charge it up and then use it and keep doing it. So you don't have to kill enemies to get it to work, which is kind of a nice thing. I'm not sure if they did this, but I'm going to get out the way because I can see it happening. If they describe this game as a Metroidvania in its sales sheet, it is not. It is stage-based but you can fast travel at the various save points to go back to old areas should you choose to. But make no mistake, the best way to describe this in that sense would be, though without as much traversal perks, think of that Shinobi game from last year where it was an individual stage, but the level itself had a sprawling layout. It wasn't just left to right. You could go up and down and find secrets and stuff. Think of it like that. And I think that's a more reasonable way to put it. And someone might go, but that's the same as a Metroidvania. And I'm going to tell you, no, it's not. We can take this offline if you don't believe. But that is to say, this game is still pretty fun. And the music for it is pretty good, too. I will say one thing that I'm surprised by, though, is that the game itself can be pretty tough in the sense that enemies, if you get unlucky, you can get kind of jumbled up with enemies and them beating the stuffing out of you. But what I'm not sure was intentional or not is when you go to a save point and you mess with the menus, you kind of just save the game, come back or whatever. However, if you choose to go to the upgrade weapons menu, even if you choose not to upgrade anything and then come back out, you get a full heal. So I'm not sure if that was intentional, because it seems weird that it would only happen if you try to upgrade a weapon as opposed to anything else related to the save point statue. But it did make my life a fair bit easier because I could fast travel back to a statue, get a full heal, and proceed. Though, to be fair, even if you do die, there's no penalty for death except for getting kicked back to the last place you saved the game and trying again. And I don't mean by last place you saved being losing progress. I just mean the last statue you saved, that's where they warp you to with all the stuff you earned up until you died. So, nothing wrong with that. Bosses in the game, not particularly brutal, but there are pretty fun ones to fight in the game, and you'll enjoy dealing with them. The one thing I will say annoyed me a little bit is regards to, well, two things. One, I had a few soft locks from trying to, like, you know, do some weird exploration. Like, there was one point where I did an air dash. Once I earned the air dash off of a cliff, because it just looked like I could go over to the left and then the game froze on me. And another, I know it didn't freeze so much as like, it kind of had a thing where I was off the screen. I couldn't walk back in and it was just doing a bunch of wacky stuff until I had to reset the game. And another time I tried to roll under an overhang thinking maybe there's a secret passage over there underneath the wall. And instead my character just got stuck and I had to reset the game. But to be fair, throughout the entire game, it only happened those two times. So I don't think that's a make or break element for buying this game. The other thing is that the weapons, they promote like five different weapons, but for the most part, the only weapons you're really going to care about are the final weapon and the spear. Everything else is kind of like, eh, whatever, with the exception possibly if you decide you want to spend the money and get all the special attacks, to which I only had the first special attack, then I decided to save my money to buy other things, and then forgot special attacks existed in the game until the second to last boss of the game. And then went back to buy one just to say, I wonder what this does. Oh, nice. I can beat the stuffing out of this guy with the attack. So that is to say, hard mode and an unintentional hard mode. Yes, it was. But with that said, I did still very much enjoy my time playing Beholgar. I did feel it was kind of funny how the final levels started to become much more sprawling experiences or environments compared to the earlier areas. But if you find yourself going into earlier levels going, man, these zones are pretty small. Well, hang back a bit. They start to get pretty wide at a certain point. And you start to realize, man, I got quite a bit of traversal to do here. But I think the game is actually a genuine good time. And I do believe it would be Holgar you to give it a try outside of the normal, you know, big release noise.
All right. Well, let's talk price on it. It clocks in $17.99 on console. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a buy recommendation. It's a fun game. And I think if you're into this sort of thing, Tom, 2D platform hack and slash adventure games, I think you'll have a good time with it. It's not particularly long, but it's long enough, and I think it's fun.
It's not always about length, right? It's about the experience.
Yes, I concur.
It's how you use that length.
I was waiting. I was like, I'm not going there. I'm going to force you to do it. I'm not going to lead in there. But yes, it is.
All right. Next up, Junkster, developed and published by Stormcloud Games, released June 16th as an Xbox Play Anywhere, Switch 2, PS5, and PC for $9.99. Junkster is a thrilling 3D action platforming adventure with a unique building mechanic. When an intergalactic cargo ship crash lands on a dangerous junkyard planet, and it's up to a scrappy little construction bot named UM13, or UM for short, to save the day. Aki, tell us about your time with Junkster, which is also available as part of Xbox Game Pass.
Well, in this, you play as little Mr. Roboto, and he has a big weapon that he bashes these weird alien monstrosities that shoot black goo at you with. And he's basically just collecting items and sticker packs and coins and getting to the end of the level. Coins and stickers are both optional, unless you're going for achievements. But throughout all of this, really what it is it's an alien reading a comic strip. So every level is its own little comic strip, more or less, is what you're playing through. And in that level, they're collecting what is actually a toy on the very front of the comic book, which is really adorable. So everything you're collecting is either a part to your ship, so that the kid can build his own little mini toy ship, or just different artifacts, they call them, which could be anything from a tiny little toy jukebox to, you know, an astronaut suit, what have you. And you're going through collecting however many coins there are in it. It tells you how many there are and how many you have out of that total. There's a sticker sheet in almost every single level that you can pick up, because again, this is a comic book, and apparently somewhere in it, it has the ability to put stickers on the pages to make your own little mini page, more or less, which you actually have access to as the player playing the game. You have access to the little diorama, which is where all the little toy pieces are, and you have access in the main menu to a sticker sheet so you can make your own little mini comic-y thing, basically. All of these levels, there's 20 of them in total. They range between 30 and maybe an hour and a half to beat if you're collecting absolutely everything in there, because good luck figuring out where they all are and not being like, okay, there's four more. Where the fuck are they? And wasting like 40 minutes of your life trying to figure out where those four are left. And yeah, occasionally there's some levels where you get to build little robots that you can use to traverse over areas that your little robot can't, which is kind of cute. Otherwise, you're picking up puzzle pieces and placing them in zones that are a yellow-colored block of some size that basically says, you can build here, and it tells you how many different blocks you can build off of there. And you build there in order to create platforms for you to jump on to get through the level or to get to secret areas that have more coins and maybe a sticker. You never know. And yeah, it's a pretty cute little game. There's not really any story to this. It's just you're collecting things because it's a comic book and they want you collecting all the different toys. The story is not particularly amazing. and yeah, it's there were two levels I didn't like. The rest of them were great. I didn't like level 15 because it's a timed level. It starts filling up with this black goo, or maybe water. I'm not sure which it's supposed to be. And if your robot touches it, they start taking damage consistently, and it's a lot of it. And if it falls completely in, it just dies. And it's just slowly filling constantly. And you had to find something in it, and it just made the level extremely irritating. And the last level, there were some mechanics to it that just annoyed me to get through. But otherwise, all the rest of the levels were really fun, cute little things. And I was like, yeah, even kids could play this. Those two levels might be a little harder and they might need an adult to help them with it. But the rest of the levels are great even for kids. And that's who I believe this is targeting, is young kids. So, yeah.
Makes sense.
Really a lot to say here.
Well, it is a Game Pass game, so you have Ultimate, you could play it that way. Otherwise, it clocks in at $10. What are your thoughts on Junkster?
I think it's totally worth that. I have played significantly shittier games for significantly more money. So yeah, I'm all for it. Go play it, especially if you have kids. They will absolutely adore this. And if you used to collect comic books way back in the day, this will be a little cute callback to then.
Cool. Next up, Slaughter Void, developed by Dread Knight, published by Hyperstrange. It released June 3rd on Steam for $7.99. Slaughter Void is a heavy metal dark fantasy slasher where hesitation is death. Chain kills, keep your momentum, shape your build, and slaughter your way into the void. Purnell, what is Slaughter Void?
It is Hotline Miami with a dose of like death metal and hellscape-esque environments. So, I don't know what the plot of this game is. I'm ain't gonna bother. Was that?
I said I'm sold.
Oh, it's good. Though you will be frustrated with all holy hell, though, but in the right way. And also slightly in the not right way, but in enough that it didn't bother me enough to not like it. So the idea behind it is that you're going from level to level to be, or to be more specific, sets of levels, because you might say get three levels in a stage where you have to beat each level to complete it and get your final score. But the goal for a level is to very bluntly kill every enemy that's existent on the level. This is a top-down, very much so fast-paced experience. And the way you do this is you maneuver your character with the left thumbstick. The right thumbstick determines what direction they are facing. You have an attack button that does your primary weapon attack, of which there are multiple you can get throughout the game. There's also another button that lets you do like a sub-weapon attack, usually meant to be a distant, fine throwable, as I like to call them. It's almost like the last game I was just talking about. But unlike that game, in this one, you choose those weapons prior to entering the level. Now, the moment the level starts, the music starts blaring, the clock starts ticking, and you got work to do. As you move throughout the stage, enemies will come at you, and when you attack them, if you don't die from one hit, because yes, you do die in one hit in this game, you will start to increase your combo. The combo has a benefit in two ways. One, if you defeat five enemies in a row and maintain your combo, you'll get a one-time shield that can absorb one blow. In addition to that, as long as you can maintain a combo, your character player's movement speed becomes very fast-paced, which you will need to get the crazy times this game requires you to get, you know, the Void Skull, which is the best ranking you can get. As you're doing this, you'll be run through the level, defeating enemies as they come along. You can also find refills on the throwables I mentioned earlier. You also gain the ability to kick things like objects and doors. So you can kick a door down or kick a barrel into an enemy, and generally it will kill them in one blow if you can land an attack on them. If you manage to complete the level and defeat everybody, you will get a victory completion. You'll be told what your time was, and if you got a good enough time, you'll get one of the various skull rankings determining how good you did, and you get to see how well you did on the leaderboard. If you die, however, which will happen a lot, you will get immediately teleported back to the beginning of the level, and you can try again. It's a very quick and damn near instantaneous process, which makes it so that this game carries that whole one more try, goddamn, this game hates me, but I don't care, I'm going to beat it, blah, 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 to the letter. It does a great job handling that. And there was definitely a couple of times where I was getting pissed because I swore up and down I hit that guy, but the game claimed I didn't. Okay, well, I guess I'm trying it again. I didn't have enough time to be pissed enough. I just yelled and kept playing. As you defeat enemies, you'll also acquire bones. I don't know what the amount is per kill or anything, but I just know that defeating enemies gives you bones. And once you complete a level and go back to the main game's hub, you are able to spend those hubs on various upgrades, such as relics that can be used to give your runs a game-changing perk. You can equip one at a time. My favorite one being that when you kick a door, the door goes flying forward. It can kill things. So kick a door down, kill five guys in the process. What's not to freaking like about that? Don't answer. There's nothing to dislike about it. And then there's also the ability to buy new weapons, so you can use a different weapon as your primary if you so choose to go and, you know, swing it in that way, and new sub-weapons as well. So you will get the ability to customize your play style to what you want in order to go in and go for the kill. And the weapons themselves actually do perform fairly differently too, which I appreciate. And I should also mention, though I generally sucked at using it, you do also get a special attack that you get when you're when a certain gauge fills up. It's generally good for hitting a lot of guys that are in front of you to do some mass swiping or clearage when you need it. I had a habit of forgetting I had it, and then, like, oh, God, some guys are coming. Just mash button, boom, got him. There it is. Oh, yeah, I had that attack built up. Comes in handy sometimes, because if you know me well from listening to the show, you know that I don't leave levels unless I get the highest ranking on the stage, so I progress slowly compared to the average gamer, I can tell you that much. But I was getting Void Skull after Void Skull, so I don't give a damn. This game is good. This game is very good, in fact. You will find yourself getting pissed every once in a while because, due to the, again, I mentioned earlier, the frenetic nature of how kills work, and admittedly, due to how this game is designed, I don't necessarily get a sense of feedback when I do kill guys sometimes. So you can easily feel yourself just kind of like blitzing through things, hitting guys, but then when you miss a guy and they get you instead, you almost can't tell sometimes because you're moving so fast, they're moving so fast, and you don't notice because you're not getting the feedback reverb. You're like, die, ha, I didn't get hit. Yes, you did. Just accept it and move on with your life. But the sooner you get past that, the sooner you can enjoy the slaughter void for yourself and have a great time murdering the hordes of hell as they try to invade your home. See, I did know a little bit about the plot. But this is a good game. I rambled a lot, but this game is fun.
Well, it's also only $8, so what do you think of that?
I want to say fuck it, why not, but I can't because it's fun, and I liked it regardless of the price, so I want to say buy it anyway.
Very good. Works for me. Hey, if it's a good game, it's a good game, and if it's worth buying, it's worth buying.
That's right.
All right, one more review before Preview-a-Palooza, and that is an unplayable game developed and published by ./badgames.zip, released October 20th on Steam as a free-to-play game, a game about accessibility settings that's just a bit too hard for you to play effectively, 10 to 15 minutes in length with 30-plus minutes of developer commentary. Aki, you wanted to cover this one specifically, so tell us, what is going on in Unplayable Game?
Yeah, this was in one of the game shows that came up recently in the accessibility ones. And basically, it's a game where you're playing a game. It uses an old Nintendo controller, basically. You see it on screen, and you actually have to move the character by moving your mouse in between the buttons. So it takes a lot longer to do anything because you can't hold like the side button and the jump to make them jump to the side because you have to move your mouse from one side of your screen literally all the way to the other one to go from the D-pad to the buttons. So the individual who made this wanted to show how accessibility features actually help people and how hard it can be to play games if it doesn't have accessibility features. Because it's like, yeah, no one's playing with, you know, necessarily a controller that's, you know, the size of their room or anything, but it gives them a better understanding of, hey, some people struggle. And this is kind of what it's like, just to give you an idea of the situation. And in the game, there reaches a level where you're just not going to be able to get any further. And then you figure out, oh, you can go into the menu and there's accessibility features in there. And you're able to fiddle with those to get it to where you can actually continue the game. And it's just a really interesting way to help people understand the situations others are going through without being like, so yeah, this is exactly what it's like. Because realistically, damn, lots of people still aren't going to get that. So this ends up being, you know, a way for people to start to actually grasp the difficulties and how all of these things can really help, where it's not like, some people are like, well, no, if you add this stuff, people are just going to cheat. It's like, no, it's an accessibility feature, and this is more or less how the game is for other people who need those features. have fun trying to beat it that way. And I really liked that. It was a really cute game. It took me a lot longer than the 15 minutes to beat it because I'm really bad at platformers, and that's what it is. But yeah, it was a really cute thing. I really liked it, and I would love for more people to play it, especially devs, just so they can really start to understand just like, oh, it actually is kind of hard for, you know, some people, and maybe get in their mind, okay, what accessibility features could we put into our game to make it to where people who have difficulty can get through it so that more people can enjoy our games. And I really liked it. It was a great concept.
All right. Well, it's the hard decision time because it's an expensive game. It's free. What do you think about
it?
Should people add it to their account with the click of a button?
Yeah, I mean, oh, man, it's a struggle. That just costs so much. Oh, yeah, totally worth it. And I think everyone should play this. I already added
it to my account. It sounds really cool. The fact that it's completely free is impressive, and it actually makes me want to find what other stuff this developer is working on.
Yeah, I think everyone should just play it because it's, you know, a nice little cheap game. I think it really helps people understand the difficulties that people who have accessibility needs. It gets them to actually understand And I love that.
Oh, no. I'm looking at the guy's next project.
Oh, no.
You remember Trouble? Pop-O-Matic? Or not Pop-O-Matic. What the fuck was it? Concentration. Where you had to put the pegs in the board. And if you didn't do it quick enough, the thing fucking exploded and the pieces went everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I know that
game. Oh, yeah. What was it? Peacemaster or something that he's making?
Perfection.
Peacewise.
Yeah, that looked horrific.
Might have been Perfection, yeah. There's too many board games as a kid. Just the one that the pieces would fucking fly everywhere if you... That's what he's working on for his next game. Or that's what they're working on for their next game. I shouldn't say he, because I don't know for sure.
That's going to be a take on that concept.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have a minute to put the pieces in. New layout every day. Oh, man.
And you actually decide how to make the game more or less difficult for yourself, because you can add or take away how much time you have to actually beat the levels.
Ooh, sign me up.
Yeah, but you can only play the level one time to get on the leaderboard.
Yeah, and it's the first time. It's a daily challenge puzzle game.
Yeah, oh, the rest of the time it's weird. Just practice.
Hey, it has a demo, and you could throw it on a wish list. So if you want to support badgames.zip, do it that way. But it is preview time. We got a big handful of previews we got to dive through because it's Steam Next Fest, and a couple were given to us, and a couple Aki's like, I want to talk about these. So yeah, we're gonna try keeping these shorter. Try rapid fire through these. First up is Broken Lore, Don't Lie, developed by Serafini Productions, published by Serafini Productions and Wired Productions. It's releasing later this year on Xbox, PS5, and PC. Broken Lore, Don't Lie is a psychological horror spinoff of Don't Watch, where lies, medication, and fragile bonds blur the line between reality and nightmare. Aki, what is going on in Broken Lore, Don't Lie?
Okay, so this is a very short demo. In it, you start off as a young woman. She is in her apartment, and she calls up somebody and basically just starts bullshitting him because I think she likes him and wants to stay in the same house with him so she can pull some moves on him. But they're talking about their prior stay at a hospital. And weird shit is actually going on, but not any of the weird shit she's claiming to this guy she's talking to on the phone with, or texting and then talking to on the phone with. And then it puts you into the actual hospital to interact with, and it becomes like kind of like PT, where you're just cycling through this area and it just gets weirder and fucking weirder. She starts seeing things, like another version of her that has holes in it. And then she wakes up in her apartment and more weird shit happens. And then the demo's over. The demo took me 20, 30 minutes to finish, something like that, I think. It was pretty short. It definitely had some creepy vibes to it. I'm definitely going to give it that. That's really it. There wasn't, you know, any puzzles to solve or anything.
All right. Well, you know how we handle previews. Wish list. Ignore. Follow. What should people do with this one?
I think follow it for now, because the Broken Lore games are very hit or miss.
Yeah.
I like more of them than I dislike them, but it's always up in the air. And right now, I don't think there's enough that I have enough information on it to know if you should wish list it. So I think follow it for now, at least, because it could be really good.
All right. Next, The Lift, Supernatural Handyman Simulator, developed by Fantastic Signals, published by Tiny Build, releasing next year. You're a handyman renovating a massive research facility abandoned after a mysterious incident. The Lift is an eerie first-person sim with satisfying house-flipping gameplay, a mind-bending story, and a highly interactive world inspired by Soviet sci-fi and the SCP Foundation. Haki, this sounds like a weird one.
Oh, it is, and it's so glorious. So, this, I think I spent an entire day on. I spent like 9-10 hours playing this instead of playing review games, because I was like, because some friends of mine ended up getting invited to play the beta for it, and they invited me because you could only invite one person. So I was like, thank you. Yes, please. And yeah, you're playing as the backup keeper, which is basically the Mr. Handyman for this corporation that apparently spans like the entire globe, more or less. And you're put into cryogenics, more or less, just in case they need you. Because the other keeper, he's been doing his job for a very long time and he's doing fine. So they don't think they'll need you. So they'll wake you up eventually and give you your paycheck and you can go on. But if something happens to the keeper, you're supposed to replace him. And now you're the keeper from this point forward until you're done and someone replaces you, more or less. So, yay! And apparently, something at some point while you're frozen has gone and fucky wucky to this place, something fierce.
Fucky wucky.
Yeah, because you wake up one day, there's no one there, there's, you know, roots growing out of everything, and the roots aren't normal, things are all falling apart, you can't find literally anybody in this entire area, and you start repairing stuff so you can get further into the building, because you're like, well, this is my job, is to fix shit, and I'm sure I'll come across somebody eventually and figure out what the hell happened and maybe go home with a paycheck. And you end up getting access to a whole bunch of different places in this, and your main way of getting around is through the lift, which is an elevator. And one of the first things you have to do is you have to fix it so it can actually work. And it's so good. You have the, I don't know if anyone remembers old pipe puzzles where water would start flowing and you had to place all the pipes. Yeah. There's puzzles very much like that in the game for electrical stuff. So it's not water. Instead, it's just how do you get things powered? There's a whole bunch of simple little room renovation style gameplay where they're like, oh yeah, grab this item, move it just enough to where you can get a screw in here, and then it magically fixes itself because you screwed it real good.
Screwed it really good.
Exactly. And yeah, you end up getting in contact with these people that were sent in to figure out what the fuck happened to this place, and you're the only one in it, apparently, and you have to do stuff for them so they can actually get into the building itself and help you out, more or less. The demo, again, it took me like 8 or 9 hours to finish the demo. It is a pretty sizable demo. You get access to a number of floors. I think you get access to like 3 floors, and you can finish at least one of them completely.
Damn.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it was so much fun. Once I got to the end, I was like, oh, I can't fix anything else in the rest of it.
We don't have a release date on this one outside of 2027 coming from Tiny Build and Fantastic Signals. Should people wish list follow or ignore the Lyft Supernatural Handyman Sim?
You should 100% wish list this game. This game is fucking awesome. I absolutely love this damn game.
Very good. Next, Roguecraft DX, developed by Badger Punch Games, published by Thalamus Digital. Full game is, quote, coming soon. Roguecraft is a casual yet challenging turn-based roguelike crafted for fans of classic dungeon crawlers and inspired by Lovecraftian horror. Explore procedurally generated dungeons with mysterious potions, scary chickens, and secret rooms waiting to be discovered. Brunel, tell us about your time checking out Roguecraft DX.
So Roguecraft DX is a roguelike well, I guess it's more like a rogue, really, not even a roguelike, to the core, in that you choose one of three different character classes, each have slightly different play styles, and you explore a labyrinth. The labyrinth generally is supposed to run about five floors, though the game promises more in the final build. But the goal on every floor, no matter what, is to find a key and then find the door that needs the key, which allows you to descend to the next floor. When you're in a screen, you can move in one of four directions. It's got that isometric 3D view. Think a Solstice for people who aren't or older than Aki. and in this game, when you do that, if there's no enemies on the screen, you'll just move free flow, boop, 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 from square to square, exploring the room. And you can easily see if there's an access to another room nearby, because there'll be like a yellow border on an exit point that shows you can walk through there and go to the next room. There's also a map in the corner that also gives an indication that there's like an exit point to this room. However, if you enter a screen where there's an enemy or enemies present, you enter the phasing structure where you move one square at a time, and whenever you move, the enemy also moves. So you find yourself trying to figure out how to navigate your way into a position where you can attack the enemy and kill them before they do damage to you or any damage at all. You have a certain level of strength, which determines how much damage you'll do to an enemy. And this can be increased by finding the right objects throughout your play of the experience. There are also some potions that will give you temporary strength boosts too. Potions, yeah, a la roguish, there are potions in this game that you can come across. And these potions, when you pick them up, will say something like, hey, here is a red potion, or a fizzy potion, or a clunky potion, or a blorpy potion, or a bubbly potion. You get the idea. And they also come in a series of colors. You don't know what these potions do until you consume them. And large part of the experience of these kinds of games is the experimentation of, what does this do? I guess I better find out. Glug, glug, glug. Sometimes it'll come in clutch and give you a full heal. Other times, it might stop time. But what I can say from my experience with this anyways, I never drank a potion that gave me a bad effect. So I was also generally, you know, frugal about when to drink potions. But I've never had a bad result for one. Maybe not the result I wanted at that time, but never a bad result. As you get further down, enemies start to become a little bit tougher. And eventually, you'll get to the end and hopefully succeed. There are treasure chests with gold in them, or mimics, because mimics suck. But in this game, you don't use the money to purchase. Instead, the money is used as a sort of score, indicating how well you did or how much you earned during your dungeon run. Whether or not the final build will give you the ability to purchase things with that gold, I have no idea. But as it stands now, it just seemed to be like currency to earn, to say, hey, I found this gold. Look at my score go up. In addition to the three characters that they let you play as, being a rogue, a mage, and a warrior, there is also an additional mode that was unlocked from the start of this thing, where you can play as a chicken. Chickens are all over the dungeons in the normal mode as things you can fight. And they're you kind of kill them. They're easy peasy jerks, though every once in a while you'll come across Chikulu, which is basically a chicken that morphs into like a weird, gross, like eldritch monster that you can kill for more experience, but he also hits a lot harder. Or not experience, because there's no experience, but you can just kill him. But in the chicken mode, you play as a chicken. You have 2 hit points. And for what I can tell, no way to get more hit points. And as you walk around, you can pick at things, but you're kind of a glass cannon. I don't call you a glass cannon because you're not even very strong. You basically can't take many hits, so you really don't want to attack things if you don't have to. But you'll come across various eggs lying around, and the eggs also have weird descriptions and the like, but they also have special effects that you don't know until you use them. Though, unfortunately, this was the one mode where I did find an egg that had a negative effect because it was a proximity bomb, and I was next to the bomb, not expecting it to explode, and it killed me. But it also killed the monster that was chasing me, so I guess it was okay.
But win-win.
With that, good times. But with that said, it was a pretty interesting and goofy mode there where I had to spend a lot of time kiting enemies and walking into acid puddles or flame pits so they could kill themselves just because I didn't want the chicken to have to deal with a skirmish if he didn't have to. All in all, I don't know what this game is intending to add. I do think it does need to add a good bit more stuff to make it particularly noteworthy, but I do feel as though I had enough fun with it as its current state to pay attention to it to see where it goes from here. And they do seem to promise more content on when they actually release the game proper.
Well, then Steam poses the question, add to your wish list, follow, or ignore?
Here's a question. What's the difference between follow and wish list?
I don't know. I think follow just keeps you updated on it. Wish list, you become a statistic of that. You want to own it.
Yeah, make it a wish list. If I'm going to follow, I may as well wish list it.
Follows.
Yeah, to me, I feel like if I care enough about the game, it's going to be wish listed. I have no desire to follow a game that's not going to get wish listed. So,
I figure wish listing is for something that you're interested in and you want to get on it as soon as it comes out. Following it is you want to wait and see more on it, but you are interested. Ignore is you're just not interested.
Well, I'll go with wish list on my queue because that just seems to make the most sense to me.
Works for me. Next up, Virtue and a Sledgehammer, developed by Deconstruct Team and Selkie Harbor, published by Devolver, releasing later this year. Go back to your hometown and tear it down with a sledgehammer in this narrative exploration game. Confront your past in a devastating story about feeling like you no longer belong in the place you grew up. Aki, what is Virtue and a Sledgehammer?
Okay, so in this, you're playing as a young woman. She's mixed-raced and gay and from a town in the U.S. that's ba-da-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding styled. So, not the best place for individuals such as that to exist in. And she lived there with her mom and her, I believe, older sister. And her older sister is very white like her mom, and she is very Middle Eastern like her dad, and bad things go about, and somehow your super genius sister has moved everyone's minds into robots, so they don't have to rely on their aging, breaking down bodies. And you don't like that. That has, for some reason, rubbed you very the wrong way. Seemingly after she does it to your mother. And you decide, you know what? None of these are people anymore. You've all been turned into robots. And you know what? Fuck this town on top of that. They're a bunch of jackasses. So you go in with a sledgehammer. And you've decided, if it exists, it needs to be smashed. And it is a glorious, glorious thing. You're able to smash through houses and tear them down like a not quite as good Red Faction game. It's pretty glorious seeing the buildings collapse beneath your strikes. And you also get to attack and destroy the robots as you see fit. Some of them will attack you. Some of them will run away and cower like the chickens they are. And you can destroy all of them if you see fit. And I very much saw fit to level absolutely everything because it was fun. Whilst you're doing this through like three sections of a level, I think maybe three levels. I'm not sure how it really spread this out. But occasionally you find little blue and red memories that show your character's past. And some of them allow you to do interactions via like little visual novel sections. Other ones are just flashes of like, oh, this is some shit. Have fun. And yeah, it's, I'm very confused by this game, but the gameplay was pretty fun because you're just smashing the hell out of things. It feels really nice just to get some vengeance out and wreck shit, even if it's in a video game. It just felt good. It's cathartic. But the story itself makes not a lick of sense to me yet.
Well, that's... is it intriguing enough to make you want to know more? That's the point of a demo. It's not to tell you everything. It's just to sell you on what's to come. So the question is, wish list, follow, or ignore? What do people do with this one?
See, this one's a little harder. For me, I think this is going to be a follow, but I'm not sure this is really for most people, realistically speaking. But I'm still going to go with a follow, just because I know it's for me, and it was for a couple of my friends, but
you're
this is
the
one
fucking
you're
sledgehammer.
Gonna...
That's for most people.
That is true. That's why I've decided to go with it for everybody. I'm just not sure if the story is going to really connect with everybody because it's a very personal styled story. I think a follow it is pretty decent for it.
There
yeah.
you go. Next is Retro Space, developed by the Wild Gentlemen, published by Quali, releasing, quote, when it's ready. Disco punk space horror where you can be a sneaky chap or a mutant action hero as you try to survive on a space station swallowed by a black hole. A mind-bending ride with weird creatures, immersive features, time jumps, and 70s mustaches. Aki, who wants a mustache ride in Retro Space?
Nobody, I hope.
Tough shit.
Yeah, so in this, you wake up one day and everything's just kind of going to shit. Either aliens have landed on your spaceship or maybe people have turned into the monsters, who knows. But there's a bunch of bug people now on the ship and they kind of want to kill you and anyone else who might be alive. And they've killed basically everyone else, so, you know. They're there to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and they're all out of gum, so you better avoid them. You end up getting a whole bunch of weapons in this. Shotgun, pistol, wrench. Good old trusty wrench. And this game is more set up for you to stealthily take down enemies and take them down via the environment. Because in a bunch of areas, there's like electrical... boxes that you can break and it'll shock the area around it. And if you get water all over the ground, it'll spread to the water. So you can fill an entire area that you know a bunch of enemies are walking across with water, destroy this thing, and electrocute every last one of them.
Nice.
In order to save on ammo. Yeah, it's pretty good. Because enemies take a lot of ammo to fuck up their day, sadly.
Environmental kills are always so fun to set up.
Very. It's a little difficult right now in this demo. I think the guy who's working on it, he needs to do a little bit more work on that, because the enemies are very hair trigger at seeing you and attacking you, so need a little more work on that to make it more viable to actually do. Thankfully, you have enough bullets in this that it doesn't matter if you can get any environmental kills, but that was kind of the whole point in it. They, however, only really interact in the light, and like the old Splinter Cell games, you can shoot the lights right the fuck out and the enemies can't see you as long as you're like not basically right on top of them. It's great. You have both a sight and a sound bar, so you know how much in light you are, as well as how much noise you're making, and everything you do makes noise. Enemies will also go out to, if they see blood somewhere, they're going to walk over there. You can clean the blood up even with that same water that you can make traps with. You can clean blood up.
So let's power wash them.
Yeah, kind of. And then, you know, as you get through this, you're finding bits of money and you're occasionally taking down enemies, or if you're me, taking down literally every enemy you come across because you're psychotic, and you're taking their genes, their genetics from them that you can use later on after a time skip to get yourself powered up. The choices that we had in this game were you could give yourself basically some of the bug people's genetics, and anytime you were in light, you would start healing, because that's something the bug people can do. If you don't kill them, they'll run off somewhere where there's a light on and then just sit and stare at it for a while as they heal themselves. And that gives you the ability to do that. There's another one that makes you take less damage, which is the Rhino Body, which is what I took. And a couple others as well that you can fiddle with. Sadly, you can't get multiple of them unless you play through the game multiple times, because you just don't get enough of all the resources. Yeah, it's a fun little stealth game. I really enjoyed myself. I've been following this for... fuck, 4, 5, 7 years, something like that. It's I was following this individual on Twitter when I had a personal Twitter, which was before Elon. So that's how long I've been following this game. And they finally got a demo out, and it was fun. I spent probably 4 or 5 hours in it before it was finished. So it was a nice little demo.
Did the spider scare you away?
Thankfully, a little bit, but not completely. Thankfully, there are only four-legged spiders, but they're still creepier than shit.
I see more than four legs on this motherfucker on the Steam page.
Nope. We're not talking about those things. They had four legs, and that's what I'm sticking with from this point.
Well, on Steam, there's a GIF of a little ball that has, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, it's a minimum 6 legs pop out of its head, and then it prop itself up with little spiky jowl things. So yeah, looks cute.
Yeah, they're horrific. And on the Steam page, you can see lots of different enemy styles that they're going to introduce right now. Only the mosquito praying mantis-y whatever spiders. Guy and a spider dudes are in there right now. So
wish list, follow, ignore. What do you think of Retrospace?
100% a wish list game. I fucking loved this. This was a great game.
Very good. We got one last preview and preview palooza for Hariti, developed and published by Ghost Case, releasing soon on Steam. What was that?
That Aki played a lot of games.
Yes, I did.
This was her call. She wanted. She's like, I'm going to cover all these fucking things. But yeah, Hariti, developed and published by Ghost Case. It's coming soon on Steam. It's a first-person psychological horror game. You'll play as a mother searching for her missing daughter in a crisis-ridden hospital. Experience an atmosphere of extreme dread within the halls of this abandoned Chinese-style medical facility. Aki, what is going on in Hariti?
Okay, MS, you play as a mom who has brought her kid to a hospital, and then the kid's like, hey, let's play hide and seek, and covers your eyes with her hands, even though that is very not how you play that game. And then suddenly the hands are removed from your eyes, and the hospital is no longer functioning. It is old and dilapidated, and your kid is missing, and now you have to go find the little shit. Yay. Parenthood, the simulator. Yay. You're looking around this old, abandoned, creepy-ass hospital trying to find her, and it turns out there's a monster all up in this bitch with you. Some creepy-ass, gangly, tall woman who has, like, a whole chunk of, like, her torso is completely opened up and it has teeth in it, but it's, like, not connected to like a stomach or anything. There's just a hole all the way through and just teeth in there just to mash you up if she catches you. It is out of
quick question. What the fuck?
The fuck the what? What huh?
Just the description of that. What?
Yeah. There was once a creepypasta that had a long-faced girl that was really creepy looking. She has damn near that exact face. So for me, she's not particularly horrifying because every time I see her face, it makes me laugh. Just because I grew up with creepypasta and I'm just like, yeah, that looks a lot like her and that's fucking hilarious. but this game is sufficiently creepy. As you're moving around, you hear her skittering about. You see just bits of shadows over occasionally. And it's just like, what the fuck? There are a few points that kind of sucked. For instance, there was one area where like you had to go close enough to spawn her, and then you had to run away from her. And you had to have run that way already to get something else to happen, because if you didn't, then she would catch up to you and kill you. And it was kind of irritating, because if you didn't know that, it was just like, oh, I get killed for no good reason. But otherwise, it was pretty interesting. It's very much more of a walking sim. There's not really, at least in this demo, there wasn't really any puzzles to it. You know, you might have to find, oh, where's this key? Let's look around in these drawers. Oh, I found the drawer that had the key. Now let me walk over and click on this lock. That's like the maximum amount of difficulty of these, of the two quote unquote puzzles, because I don't know what else to call them, that are in this.
We will see in due time how the final game compares puzzle wise. Again, all of these games that we talked about tonight are part of the Steam Next Fest. You could check out the demos right now until I believe the 22nd, something like that. I don't know. Go on Steam. You use it all the time anyway. We know your wish list is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Haridi, should people wish list follow, ignore this one?
I think this is going to end up being a wish list one, because this is very creepy, and I really appreciate that. I think this is a good wish list one.
Very good. And with that, we are done with this episode. Big thanks, Aki Purnell, coming on, hanging out the whole time, being here. Big thanks to Maze Dude and Len for coming on, hanging out with us, just chatting to chat. I like episodes like that, just chatting to chat.
Chitty chat, chat.
Laid back.
With my mind like on those. My money and my money on my mind.
I'm still laughing at your first question. What is a video game? Tell us in your own words. No cheating. Don't use Wikipedia.
I could have given a fucking dissertation on that. I wrote a paper about that in university. So,
Lord. Anyway, yeah. Music for this episode. We're going to play some Wizards and Warriors from Maze Dude.
Not bad.
Very nice.
I mean, it works.
Yeah. It matches the stuff you were talking about.
I'll just play the dying music from Wizards and Warriors for 7 minutes straight.
You're evil.
I am. But if you've ever played Wizards and Warriors, that's how you've played it.
You're constantly on the death's door. You're always on death's door.
You're always down to like 2 hit points left. And then you'll stay alive forever.
I genuinely feel slightly proud of myself for beating that game as a child.
That was a tough one.
I never heard of that game, so
we got to get you set up with Nick some Arcade? NES games.
Fair enough.
Have you ever watched Nick Arcade?
That on Nick Arcade?
No. I'm almost positive it Wizards and Warriors was, or at least Iron Sword was.
I think Iron Sword was.
That's one of the
Scorchers. Wizards and Warriors was.
Well, I mean, it should have been.
I just want to say, I'm so mad that Wizards and Warriors was not a part of Rare Replay, because that is made by Rare.
Oh, it should have been, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, it should have been. But I guess Midway published it.
Midway pulled rank.
I don't fucking know. But anyway, big thanks again to everyone for coming on. Music is going to be Maze Dude with Wizards and Warriors. Does anyone have any final words to wrap this episode up?
No. I mean... No.
Play demos on
Be Steam well. Steam Next Fest is fun. There you go.
Steam Next Fest now through Monday, June 22nd. Yeah, Steam
Next Fest. I just hate playing demos. I'm like, too many games out now that I can't get around to. I need demos.
Next phase.
Other games I can't.
Seriously, my least favorite time of the year. Like, I had 50 emails today. There was one that was worthwhile.
Damn.
Yeah, that's how we
check out our demo. Check out our demo for our game that releases in 28. No, no, thank you.
Yeah, but and this ain't even the last demo that I'm playing for the show.
Even if I was a demo kind of guy, the idea is that, okay, I like the game. Now what? Now you wait a year.
Yeah, I think only one of these I actually had to do for the show. The rest of these, I was just like, this was fun. I'm going to talk about it.
No.
Because and, they well, happen to be one of the game shows.
Technically, you're not doing a demo. You're doing an open beta.
Well.
Yeah.
Close enough.
Because it's out in like a month and a half. But anyway, we need to end the show. Someone give me final words.
Go play. Steam
Next Fest.
And then we kept talking, so the show never ended.
Well, shut the fuck up.